I want to read this morning from Hebrews chapter 13, verses 15 to 19. There's Bibles in front of you in the pew. Some of you have your phones with you or whatever. I'm reading from the NIV again. It'll be a little different than what's in front of you, but almost the same. So here is 15 to 19 at the end of Hebrews chapter 13. Through Jesus. If you're reading Hebrews at all with your eyes open, when the writer says, through Jesus, it ought to evoke something in you. If you're wondering, this is not in the script, this is me talking for a moment. It should evoke something in you of what the writer has been trying to say all along. And we'll get into this a little bit more. But when he says, through Jesus, it's not just a simple uttering of a phrase. He has built an argument. He has established who Jesus is. And when he says through Jesus, it's weighty. Some people would use this phrase, it is a pregnant phrase, full of meaning. And it should cause you to just stop and go, oh, that Jesus, the one that he's been talking about, the one that he's been arguing for. Through Jesus, therefore, let us continually offer to God a sacrifice of praise, the fruit of lips that openly profess his name, and do not forget to do good and to share with others, for with such sacrifices God is pleased. Have confidence in your leaders and submit to their authority, because they keep watch over you as those who must give an account. Do this so that their work will be a joy, not a burden, for that would be of no benefit to you. Pray for us. We are sure that we have a clear conscience and desire to live honorably in every way. I particularly urge you to pray so that I may be restored to you soon. The world is full of fascinating people from different parts of the world, and I love learning their stories, what it's like where they live, observing and understand what I would call cultural idiosyncrasies, the little things that make cultures unique. And one of my favorite groups of people are Australians, the Aussies. Is there any Aussies in the room? Man, we should make it our job to go out after today and find Aussies and bring them back to church. They just make everything more interesting. We lived in Bali, as many of you know, and so we got to... Bali was just one island over, basically, and so we met lots of Australians. And I suppose for me, one of my... Early on, this Australian, I fell kind of like in love with those movies and loved this character. Remember him? Anybody want to shout out the name? That's it. Wow. And then maybe you know that one too. Sadly, he died a few years back, but you remember him, yeah? Another crazy Aussie. When you get together with Australians, there's some parts of Australia where if you are together with them and they're talking to one another, you're not sure if they're speaking English, honestly. And the other thing that they do is they shorten everything and they have a nickname for everyone. So if you get in a room of Aussies and I was to ask, what's my nickname? Does anybody know what my Australian name is? It's Baza. Baza. And they all know it. There's no question they'd go, it's Baza. And they all know it. And I think that's hilarious. I love it. It's awesome. It's kind of like if I said to you, Eduardo is, there you go. It's the same thing. Australians are fascinating. One of my favorite expressions, though, that Australians use a lot, and it's not unique particularly to them, they just happen to use it a lot, and it's this expression, lost the plot. Now, I spent some time this week speaking to our translators to ask them how they're going to translate this phrase, because this phrase is going to show up all the way through. So if you're listening in Spanish this morning, my apologies if Robbie gets it wrong. I think Robbie got it right, though, based on what he suggested as a translation. But essentially, it is a way of saying someone has gone off course in life or lost their way, a bit cuckoo perhaps, not acting in line with what is normal and accepted inside of maybe a tradition or, you know, public life or whatever. they'll just say, you know, that guy's lost the plot. It's a handy little expression. One, I wonder sometimes if it's not a perfect descriptor of what is, and I'm going to be careful with how I say this, but most wrong with many of us followers of Jesus from time to time. I'm couching my words there just a little bit because I'm trying not to be judgmental. But I see this sometimes. As I've read and studied through Hebrews, prepared to teach through this stuff, this incredibly rich text, I've been struck by the fact that, as I'm sure that many of you have, that this author, whoever it is bent on a very basic thing, and it starts the book with it, closes the book out, and it bleeds off every page of Hebrews. It's this bit. He says at the beginning, in the past, God spoke to us through a bunch of different ways, prophets, angels, Moses. But now there is just one, Jesus, our great high priest. And as he'll say at the end of this chapter, that we'll read at the end of the service, our great shepherd of the sheep, better than Moses, higher than the angels, and on and on and on. And if you don't get that reading through Hebrews, you're reading a version I've never seen before. And here in our text for today, he draws the readers and hearers' attention back to this place again, where he says this, through him, literally, through him then. He's about to call us, the readers, his hearers, if you will, to a few things, and he wants us to know how all of this is possible, on what these coming commands rest, and the fact that they are not lofty or unattainable expectations, but possible and critical and necessary for living in this, what I would call a new kingdom reality that they are inheriting, that they are coming into. I've said this oftentimes, that this is a transitional phase for these Hebrew people. They're coming into something new, something fresh. It's like he is saying, through this Jesus that I've taught about, that I've laid out in painstaking detail, his unimaginable greatness. He's crafted these detailed arguments from, used a lot of images from their history, like sacrifice and temple analogies and all those kinds of things. And he wants them to begin to understand and catch what I would say is the gravitas of this gospel. The critical importance of it. It is through this Jesus, through Jesus the Messiah, not just a man, not a dead, broken, not weak, not less than God, through this Jesus. You just have to stop and take it all in. Through this Jesus. So after 13 chapters of a consistent message, if you've not gotten this yet, if you are still trying to augment your new faith, and he's saying this to them, and we could be saying the same things to us this morning, if you are still trying to augment your new faith with elements of an old system or some kind of, you know, works-based salvation, if that's the case, then you have lost the plot. And in fact, you may have never gotten it in the first place. Now, some questions that I'd like to pose before we get further into the text and unpack what he is commanding here, I'd like to ask us a key question and then some thoughts underneath it. And the question is this: which Jesus is it for you? Is it Jesus my best friend? You like that picture? How about the Jesus who is formed in my mind the way I like him? How about, you know, is it the Jesus that's big enough to handle my little problems, but there's some big ones that is just going to be too hard? How about the Jesus who sets little children on his knees, but not the Jesus who gets really ticked off in the temple and makes a whip and starts chasing people out and knocking over tables. How about Jesus who forgives all my imperfections even if I won't overlook and forgive my own brother? Is that the kind of Jesus you've crafted? Me? Have I done that? What about the Jesus who loves me but there's no way he loves my neighbor because my neighbor is a jerk? You obviously don't know my neighbor, not my neighbor. How about Jesus that you can sing to on Sunday but completely disregard on Monday to Friday? How about Jesus I'll trust willingly with some things but not everything? That one thing that I don't want to trust to Jesus, don't talk about that, don't preach about that, don't sing about that. A lot of what I have just listed is probably something that some of you, if not all of you in this room this morning, at some point in that list, something resonated with you. I'd find it absolutely impossible to believe that not one of those things didn't resonate somewhere. And that at some place, it's not realized on the pages of your life journal, if you will. But if what I described is more normal than abnormal for you, then I would suggest that you, and perhaps I, if it's me, have lost the plot. We've missed what it is. We're coloring outside the lines. I don't care. Use a different expression. And if that's the case, very, very little of what is going to be put before us in just a moment here in the text, in the rest of this chapter, none of it will really resonate with you at all, or you might see it as even unnecessary. But my hope and prayer is that you have grasped just a tiny little bit the magnitude or the majesty, the power, the authority that is in the name and the person of Jesus that has been laid out before us in this amazing letter. And that you will realize that what we are about to and have been called to as his followers, his children, is not some fable-like story that is rooted in maybe what you might think as historical fiction. Maybe bits and pieces, but a lot of it's just made up. But rather you will understand this as not about them, but about us. This is our story. With a plot that guides, that unfolds and winds its way between and in between our own story into a beautiful fabric that's only fully revealed one day. The writer of Hebrews would say something like that. One day begins here, but one day we shall see it all. That's how he speaks. But it starts now. But the point is, now you can begin to live it because he's the author and the perfecter of our faith and he lived it. So with that background and with that, underpinning and support for the narrative, let's see what it is in these last few verses that we need to hear before he says goodbye. What we need to heed, what we need to listen to, what we need to be doing, as it were. The writer does what he has done so often and over the course of this book. I've already alluded to this morning. He uses language and images of what they knew. And they knew it so well, but then he's laid Christ over top of this language and he points them to Jesus. He speaks of the sacrifice of praise. You can't use the word sacrifice in this context and not have the Jewish people wake up and go, oh, I know what that is. The book has hammered home the point that Jesus has offered the perfect once-for-all sacrifice and that there is no longer a need for sacrifices on our part or their part. But what is required is acceptable and pleasing at this point is praise, thanksgiving, and acknowledgement on our part of where this new stance comes from. This Jesus. this Jesus, through this Jesus. Folks, this is a complete breakaway from Judaism. And it was a cause for disgrace for many of them, that they were essentially seen as probably traitors within Judaism and as a dangerous sect by the political establishment. We know that. Essentially, they were outsiders. And this is what the writer points to in the verse just before our text today, when he says in verse 13, "Let us then go to him outside the camp, bearing the disgrace that he bore." So what does this mean for us now? And how does a sacrifice of praise fit into this context? I don't think it's all that complicated, really. I don't believe we literally have a context that we can do like a one-to-one comparison when he says, go outside the camp. And even for them, that was language that was in the past. It certainly doesn't fit our context. And we are not being called, likely, to the same kind of persecution that Christ bore, or even them. We are not actually suggesting this morning that we become sort of some kind of anti-establishment people, leaving organized religion or being religious, I don't know, weirdos? Is that a concept? I don't think that's what he's calling us to. What I do think this passage calls us to is a certain stance that may, if lived in and lived out, may cause there to be some reproach come your way, persecution in some form, ridicule at work, ridicule in your family, maybe from your friends. Living a life of continual acknowledgement of Jesus as the author and the perfecter of your faith. I could use other language, like living openly with Jesus as your leader and the director of your life. In the context of all things, but maybe, here's one for you, maybe within the context of decisions at work, decisions in the family, or your leadership style, living outwardly as a follower of Jesus, that's going to get you noticed. Giving praise to Jesus for everything we have. I'm not talking about walking around going, praise Jesus, every time something good happens, but maybe you could do that under your breath. Maybe you could just quietly do it, but focus and understand that everything that we have is in and through Jesus. Living as servants who follow a master, etc. That kind of life is outside the camp living. It's against the stream living. Verse 16 follows this up with the idea that together with this praise, there has to be practical and real world caring for the needy, both among us and beyond us. Just praise is not enough. Neither is just doing good and for others. It's kind of a both and situation. And that is the point of what's being said here about through Jesus. The one who so generously and painfully sacrificed for you demands, remember I talked about this before, reciprocal responsibility, reciprocal love, and humble acceptance of your role in bringing that love and vocal praise, practical real world ways to those who are hungry and sick and broken. It's two sides, really, of the same gospel coin. Keeping with this theme this morning, I used an Australian coin. But on one side, we confess with our mouths. On the other side of the coin is how we act in an overflow or an outflow of love. And together, the writer says, God is pleased with that. God is pleased with that. Folks, this is why I think that so many individual followers and churches have, I'll use the phrase again, lost the plot. They might be good at one, but miss the other. Or they fail to see the practical aspect, this whole overflow of love, or some people might use phrases like social justice and doing good and that kind of stuff. They fail to see that work as real gospel and kingdom work, but rather they do it as a way to maybe lessen their guilt. maybe just to get engaged with people, as a way to motivate financial participation. Look at all the good we're doing. Don't you want to give us your money? Show the world that we care. Attract a crowd, perhaps. That place has got something going on, and on and on. Reasons that are less than like both sides of the same coin and doing gospel and kingdom work. There's not too much you can do about others that you suspect maybe have not got this right or lost the plot. In fact, it really is not for me or you to judge and or to say. But it is for me and you to examine our own hearts and consider how this part of the plot, if you will, is unfolding in your life. How does this church reflect these kingdom dynamics and live out this exhortation? I would argue that Union Church is at an interesting time and place in its history. I have a book on my desk that found in the archives here that gives the first hundred years of Union's history. It's a fascinating read, and we're up to and over 150, if I'm not mistaken, right around there. Math's not my strong suit, so. After 100, though, do you keep counting? It's a wonderful history. But I'd argue that we're at an interesting place in Union's history. We've just come through a pastor resigning, a new pastor coming along. We hired a worship director. We're looking to hire a full-time person for children and family ministries. We're partnering with church planters. Even asking people to consider leaving Union to participate in church planning. Is that ridiculous or what? That was a joke. It's not ridiculous. Feel free to laugh. But don't fool yourself, folks. Some of this is hard for a family like this. It requires flexibility and adapting. And some of us to set aside things we hold pretty close to our hearts for the sake of the kingdom. It's not easy necessarily. But all through this, and this ties back into this passage, but all through this time, you and we have had leadership. People who pray and care and love and give their time and energy, and very often it's quite thankless, and that's not why they do it, obviously. And the writer here calls for confidence, submission to, and prayer for spiritual leaders. And he closes this section by calling for this. Particularly, he says, prayer for him as he wants to continue on his mission and do good things and come back and see them again. And it may seem as though this command, this exhortation to give praise to Jesus and care for others has little to do with the next one, to submit to and have confidence in your leaders. But I think that they are absolutely related to one another. I certainly see a relationship here. And the reason, I believe, is humility and interdependence go together. An independent spirit says, I don't need you. I'll take care of my own issues. And don't tell me what to do. And this is a totally contrary stance to the way things are set up in God's kingdom or God's economy, and with Jesus at the head of the church. It doesn't fit. Jesus submits to the will of his Father, and through that comes the great provision for us. When we then follow that model and submit to leadership, have faith that God is guiding them, pray for them to be strong and faithful, and then through all of this, God provides for us as well. Understanding how all of this works, why it is necessary, should create a welcoming and not a distancing stance. This is something you should be thankful for, is what I'm trying to say. Essentially, what could be said here is that an independent spirit that has no confidence or submission to earthly spiritual leadership is the same as saying, listen to this, and this might be troublesome for some of you with backgrounds and what you've experienced in the church and wherever you've come from. No confidence or submission to earthly spiritual leadership is the same as saying, I don't trust you, Jesus. That's hard. One writer has said this: the doctrine is that subordination is necessary to the welfare of the church, and that there ought to be a disposition to yield all proper obedience to those who are set over us in the Lord. I got to tell you, I'm a little uncomfortable preaching and teaching through this stuff. But it's here, and it's so intricately and intrinsically connected. I love how the writer closes this section just before the benediction. He gets very personal and humble. He says, I am your leader, and I need prayer. And he talks about how prayer with and for one another is this idea that the illustration, it's an illustration that ties this whole passage together. Prayer for and with one another. Praise on my lips, the care for others, humble acknowledgement of the one who leads me, and the engagement that is possible with God because of how this is all set up. I think, though, that there is a dynamic that exists, probably for all of you. You know, you've heard these phrases, I'm praying for you. You know, please pray for me. Sure could use some prayer in this system. You know, in this situation. And then the question becomes, do we? Maybe not. Got convicted of that this week when I was writing this paragraph. God just brought back to my mind some very, very recent situations that I actually said I was going to pray about, but then just didn't because I forgot. More important things to do? I don't know. So I had to stop and pray for them. Maybe it happens to you this way. You get a WhatsApp from a friend, a call or an email, and you reply with this. And I know this because some of you do this, and it's not just one, it's like 12, which I don't understand what that means. Does it mean you prayed 12 times, praying lots? You really like emojis? I don't know what it is. I would certainly hope we could get past emojis on this. Your leadership needs prayer. This church needs people who pray. Union needs to be a people who acknowledges what the Lord has done and then gets out there to find the ways that God wants to use them in this world. Your leadership also needs for you to have confidence in them as they have confidence in God to provide and guide. And this includes the elders, myself, all the ministry staff that put these services together each week. Those who teach your children on Sunday, that's a leadership function. Everyone needs your prayer and your support that way. And this passage calls us to humble interdependence and a lifestyle of open acknowledgement of God's goodness to us through Jesus. Through this Jesus. Remember the two sides of the same coin? You confess with your heart and you act out of an overflow of the heart, of the love that God shares with us through Jesus. And I think quite possibly that the reason why prayer is here is it's the key to connecting all of these commands together. When we pray, honestly and humbly, dependently, the Father heart of God for His children, I think, is revealed to us. Think about that for a minute. The Father heart of God for His children. Not a judgmental big throne with a guy with a beard and lightning and thunder. No, think about your children if you have them. The father heart, the mother heart is revealed to us. He reveals it to us. That's how the care and the compassion and all of those things grow in us so that we can pray more effectively, so that we can do the other side of the coin effectively for the right reason. The writer tells us that when these things come together, God is pleased. And in that place, the doing good and the sharing with others becomes sacrifices. Interesting word. Things that have been set aside for a holy purpose now become holy themselves. This is the language that the writer uses. Sacrifices. Holy things. I love the way that Hebrews comes together in very, very practical ways at the end. I'm sure that there are some of you who have felt that this last several months in Hebrews has been at times, well, maybe a little bit tedious. We heard that one already, but we're going back to that again. Do we need to do that again? We had that a couple weeks ago, right? Tedious. Nothing of that sort happens here at the end of Hebrews. Love each other. Don't be sexually immoral. Offer hospitality. Remember your leaders. Keep on praising Jesus. Pray, and I'll help you with it all. That's just chapter 13. I don't think I even touched on all of it. This is the most excellent part. I love this part. He asks us to do that, and then he says, he will help us do it. Right? He doesn't orphan us, if you will. Can I use that word here? Orphan us with a bunch of head knowledge, wonderful truths about who Jesus is. No, it translates into there's stuff that we need to do now because of this and can do because of this. And I'll help you do it. He says, we can, you can do this. I want to conclude today with a practical exercise. The writer of Hebrews calls us to pray for our leaders. Do good to one another. Pray for each other. In the quietness of the next, let's just do this for 2 minutes. 2 minutes is going to seem like an eternity to you. But let's just take literally 2 minutes of quiet and just pray. I've given you a whole bunch of things that you could pray for. Elders, other leadership, Sunday school teachers, worship people. There's people who welcome you at the tent. There's a ton of volunteers that work Sunday mornings. Take some time and just start this way. Bow your heads, close your eyes, and ask God, who do you want me to pray for this morning? And then pray for that. And then ask God, what about the other side for me? What acts out of my heart, the overflow of my heart? What do I need to do this week to be someone who brings these two together and acts in a way that is pleasing to God? Does that make sense? Do that now for just a couple of minutes.